Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to New Books and Biography, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. I'm Mark Clovis, your host for the channel. Today I'm speaking with Frank DiMatteo, co-author with Michael Benson of the book Lord High Executioner, the legendary mafia boss Albert Anastasia. Frank, welcome to the New Books Network.
Thank you.
I wonder if you could start us off by telling our listeners something about yourself.
Okay. Well, I was born in South Brooklyn. Grew up in the Gallo crime family. My father was a hitman for the Bafacci family. My godfather was Joey Gallo's bodyguard. My uncle, Joe Schipani, was with Anastasia and Joe Adonis. So I pretty much, you know, grew up in this life.
I that comes across very nicely in the book because I got the impression that what we're talking about here is not just a book where you were looking at newspaper articles or, you know, books written by others, but you're basically relating what you heard and what people told you about these people. These are not just, you know, dusty figures. They're very real people that you interacted with.
Yes. Well, we had to do research like anything else to find out some, you know, basic stuff, historical stuff. But why we did it was because we did have that little closeness. Again, I'm a fan of Albert. I mean, you see the Brooklyn guy, he was a real, real tough guy. And I happen to appreciate that. So it was no brainer to do something about Albert. Plus, my uncle was with him. It was always spoke about when I was younger. Joey Gallo, which we were with, it was supposedly one of the hitmen. So it was always, his name was, which came up when I was younger. So it was pretty easy to decide to do an Anastasia book.
It's interesting for me because I'm not I'm not an expert in American history. And you know, there was a lot in your book that was familiar, and yet Albert Anastasia is not a name that is as common as, say, Lucky Luciano or Meyer Lansky or Frank Costello or a lot of the figures of that period. Why do you think that Albert Anastasia is maybe not as well known or as commonly known as some of those other figures are today?
That's a good question, man. That's a good question. He probably did more than any one of them in a lot of different ways. You know, it's the media, man. It's who publicizes you, who wants to write. You know, there wasn't a book written about Anastasia. So when I was approached, and I made sure that I didn't want to be repetitious. I looked, there was nothing about Albert. I was in shock. So I even scratched my head and spoke to Michael Benson and said, why? You know, we don't know. I think people just jump on bandwagons, you know, and they just write what they think is going to sell or write what they think is going to, what people want. And that's why I don't think there's much about Albert, because Albert's, you know, you read the book. Mm-hmm. I learned things that I didn't know exactly too. I mean, I know some street stuff, but it was stuff I didn't know. I mean, the guy was an interesting character.
As I was reading it, I was especially surprised because while Albert Anastasia was not a person who was known to me, so many of the events that you describe in the book are very famous. They've been mined by authors of other nonfiction works. They've been mined by authors of novels like The Godfather. So it's funny how he's a figure that for me was unknown, and yet in some ways his life was very famous, and I just never really made the connection until I read your book.
Right. Well, Albert was mentioned in many different books, you know, movies, you know, documentaries. But Bane just never did a complete, historical story on him. Again, who knows? But after doing the research and knowing what I knew from the street, I found him to be really interesting. It was worth my time.
I was wondering if you could take us back to the beginning and talk about Albert Anastasia's upbringing, because he is, he's an immigrant. He comes from Italy, and it's a very interesting story in a lot of ways, both what his childhood was like and how it was that he came to America. I was wondering if you could explain what that was.
Okay, well, Albert came over like most immigrants, especially Italian immigrants, at the turn of the century. They come from poverty, came to New York or somewhere in the U.S. to, you know, for the Golden Fleece. And when they get here, they found that there was the streets are not to, you know, pay with gold. These guys were hungry. They were treated really bad by the system that was in here. And my philosophy is that you can create a criminal, especially when they're hungry. So, and I think he was a product of the time. You know, he came into a situation over here that was not good for Italians. So, you know, they were treated really bad here. And, you know, some guys, some people band together and they do what they got to do. And this is what we have today. This government has produced a lot of people by their ignorance. So, and it's always came back and bit them in the butt. And Albert was just one of many that came over and was they weren't happy of their situation when they got here. And they became who they became. That's my opinion on Albert. You know, why? Well, that's my opinion on any old gangster from turn of the century, except for the psychopaths and people who are just morons. But I'm talking about real gangsters that came out of poverty. That's my opinion with all of them.
Yeah, that's the point of Anastasia's story that I thought was typical. But he's very atypical in the sense that he has an ability and as you demonstrate a skill that basically brings him to the top of his profession. I mean, as you're describing, a lot of guys were like him, but not every guy could do what he did and get to where he was. How did he start out in America in terms of becoming a member of organized crime? Who did he join? Who did he associate with? And how did he start to really distinguish himself?
Well, he was a young guy, like in Brooklyn in those days, young guys who came over, you only had one opportunity to work over here. And 99% of it was at the docks. And he worked at the docks like everybody else did if you can get a job, because the Irish ran the docks at the time. And as Italian, you have to, you had to wiggle your way in and get some work. And he had no problem, you know, wiggling his way in, and he happened to be, a tough kid at the time, and he didn't take no garbage from no one, and he did his first killing when he was, attacked when he was a very young guy, and that started his life into to where he, where he went, who he became.
It's a story of, Albert had no fear, you know, and he didn't mind killing, you know, he had no remorse. Some guys have it, some guys don't. Albert had no remorse at all. I mean, I think maybe later on, maybe he was a little more psycho, you know, but I'm not a psychiatrist, I don't know, but I've been around enough of them. I know a few things, but at the beginning, I think it was just survival.
It was interesting also how you look at the methods of his killing. And you talk about one of the things that distinguished Anastasia from the others who did what he did, which is that you mentioned that a lot of them had a particular style or method. They preferred, say, using a knife or using a gun or using a rope. And it, as you explained, you know, he was, you know, really, you know, very good at doing all sorts of things. And that was one of the things that caused him to stand out early on.
Yeah, well, he was hands on. He'll strangle you to death. And this guy was a tough guy. He'll strangle you. He'll, you know, he'll stab you in the back of the neck. He'll shoot you. He'll smother you to death. I mean, the guy was a killer. And he had no remorse of doing it anyway. And he was a hands on. He was one of those guys that hid in the shadow and shot you from a block away. That's not what his MO was. I think he was a hands-on guy because he had no remorse. He was fearless in that way too. So that's why he was so hands-on in what he did. You know, Albert is I can't say unique because other guys were like that too, but I don't think as passionate as Albert. You know, from his background. Albert wasn't a happy guy. You know, he was not a happy guy. He was never a happy guy. And that's why he killed so well and so easily.
Yeah, you mentioned about how he strangled him. I was thinking of that part of the book because it really does convey a sense as to, and I'm connecting this with what you were just saying about the docs, about how he comes across as being a physically very strong person. And that seems to be, you know, part of what made him such a remarkable person early on in terms of rising up.
Well, you know, he wasn't a very big guy. I don't know his numbers offhand, but he was not a very big guy. He was a strong guy. He wasn't very big. But Albert sent fear into him, man. You know, when he was young, you know, he made his bones, killed where to kill. You know, Lucky Luciano and those guys found out about him. And that's how he wound up out of jail because they backed him up on a retrial and he wound up out of death row. And he went right with the boys, and they knew that Albert was a stone killer, and but he was not a very nice guy. He was, you know, he just was not a very nice guy. he made wise guys shake in his presence. I mean, nobody even liked to even go sit down with Albert. He was just not a good guy. I mean, some guys, you know, are tough, and you know, you got to be fearful of them. But Albert, you didn't want to go even meet, and you're another guy that kills people, and you're a captain or a skipper or something like that, in the structure of the mob, and you don't even want to sit with him. That's how bad this guy is. So, like I say all the time, you're as good as you are. You know, and that's why he moved up the ladder. You know, to become the boss, because the treachery and breaking the rules to get there, he was good at it.
I was wondering if you could maybe provide us with a bit of context at this point in his life, because you start him out he comes to America right around the time of the First World War. He's coming up in the New York organizations during the 1920s. This is the era of Prohibition. And he plays a role in this very famous struggle between Joe Masseria and I can't remember his name, Sal Maranzano. And I was wondering if you explain where Anastasia was in that and what role he played in that very famous struggle between these two men.
Well, if I'm mistaken, Abu was one of the killers on the Masseria hit. So he was very instrumental on it. He was one of Lucky Luciano's top killers at the time. It was Albert, it was Vito Genovese, and what's his name? Bugsy Siegel, and another guy on here, I can't think what it was right now. So they were the top close guys with Lucky. So you're going to use your best to go to take out a boss. And I think he did already, he had 2-3 bodies at that time already, Albert Anastasia, you know, when he went and did the hit with them on Masseria. You use your closest guys. Albert was a killer. If he was, I don't know if he was a psychopath at that point. You know, I know towards the end, you know, he was losing his mind in certain ways, maybe from the power, you know, just from the freedom of killing. But at that point, he was a loyal hitman for Lucky, and that's why he grew, you know, and became who he became, or in a position to become who he became, is from doing all the work. That's why he got there.
And that makes me think about what you were just talking about. It's about how uneasy it must be. Here's a man who you can rely upon to go kill a boss and to get the job done. And that's something that you absolutely need if you're somebody like Lucky Luciano. At the same time, you have a guy who doesn't think twice about killing a boss. And that's definitely got to make you a little uneasy.
Well, you know, it's always been that way, man. I mean, Albert. This is the third boss that was killed in the history of the American mafia. There was two before that was taken out that didn't supposed to be killed in the first place because they broke the first rule. The rule's broken every day. The rule that was made from the wise guys or from the bosses to protect themselves was you can't kill a boss. That was the first rule ever broken. It just didn't help. So they knew it. Lucky did it to his guy. They used Albert Anastasia as a gun. But Lucky's the one that went against, you know, the one against his bosses. So it's been done a long time. When you got guys around you that are killers, you use them. And a lot of guys at that time a lot of shooters that time. I think a lot more those days than the last 50 years. And my reason for that is, again, they come through poverty. They come as immigrants over. They were treated like shit. And they had their own, mindset on how things were going to work. And with money and with, you can buy a lot of things, especially the law. Those days, the law was they bought them very easily. There was still a struggle between the Irish and Italian on the docks, and it's all about power. You know, the strongest wins. And these guys were the hardened criminals. You know, hardened guys. And that's why they're so hard compared to today. Albert just happens to be one of the, you know, really, 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 you know, hard ones, you know. It could be, just in his mind, you know, because he went through some bad shit. Excuse my language again. Went through some bad stuff, and, you know, it takes a toll on you. And then killing comes easy when you can get away with it. And the power, you know, starts fogging your mind. And that's what Albert became. But one thing about Albert, they were afraid of. He made men shiver. And that's what's so interesting about Albert. There's been other killers before Albert, after Albert. But no one made guys shiver like Albert. That's the key of it.
And also,
that's what I find interesting.
And also, there's never been a killer who was so who created an organization that was as famous as his. I sometimes watch shows from the 50s and 60s, and they refer to Murder Incorporated, which to me says something about how large that organization loomed in the imagination. And as you explain in the book, you know, the very name was, you know, an invention of the media, but it was a very real organization that Albert Anastasia, you know, organized and ran. I was wondering if you could perhaps explain a bit how it worked and why they set it up, and why was it so effective?
Well, why they set it up? They set it up because pretty much Lucky Luciano and Maya Lansky really, really ahead of their time. They were brilliant in a lot of ways, and they needed a structure to isolate themselves away from the law. They knew if they don't speak to no one or they don't contact those days, they get away with it. You know, they step away. So I think it was Lansky and Louis Lepke that really put it together. Lucky made Albert Anastasia in charge of it because Anastasia in Brooklyn. You know, he's a Brooklyn guy. He's running under Lucky, and those guys in Brownsville. I mean, the same story. You got guys from the ghetto. You got guys come poverty. You got guys come up. They were Jewish guys or Italian guys. I don't care what they are. You're hungry. You come. You got a gun. You're gonna eat. And that's why these guys came up. And they found each other because, really, you know, it's easy to find guys that do what you do. It's just easy. And they put that Murder Inc. together, and they were just good at what they did, you know. I mean, it got sloppy after a while because you get sloppy when you become content. And they got sloppy. But it was a great organization. Now, me personally, I always argued the point that they – hold on – they run around killing 4 million people. I don't believe that. I just don't believe that. So they killed a lot of people. But you know, if it was 100, 400, or 1,000, they killed a lot of people. That's what they did. They enforced the law for the mob. They killed people who had to be killed. They collected money. You know, they did a lot of things. Albert ran them good. You know, they feared Albert. Even they were killers, but you got killers that feared Albert. And it just ran well. It ran well until it slipped up. Just like today, these guys flipping. They did it then. You know, they think this is new about the guys coming rats and stuff like that. I mean, I scratch my head. I go, oh, you know, people say, well, I can't believe mobs no good no more, all rats. But they've been doing it since the 30s. What are you talking about? I'm not an educated guy. I'm a ninth grade dropout. But I see that. Don't you see that? I mean, you know, read between the lines. It's not new. But he ran a good organization, and he ran it with fear. He had some smart guys around him. He had Costello, Frank Costello around him. Louis Lepke is the one that was really, you know, the in-between guy between what Albert needed to be done and Boys Brownsville. I happen to find those guys would be really interesting, you know? So, it was a good one when they had it, while they had it, and then everything's over. Everything ends. You know, just like, Albert ended at one point because, pretty much he ended because there's always somebody behind you that wants to step up. That's the way this game is played. You know, it's politics here too. It's the same thing. Mm-hmm. You got to run and you got to get ahead of someone. That's how it works. And it was Carlo's time. He was backed up by Genovese Vito, and it was his time to go. And they killed him just like he killed Mangano, just like Mangano killed Salisi, like Salisi killed, I can go on forever about killing your bosses. And it was just, I was time to go. They argue about, I put it that he was selling buttons to people. Now they're saying that Scalisi was selling buttons to people. I wasn't there. I don't know. A couple people say it's crap. A couple people say it's true. Even in the streets when I was younger, you don't know if he really sold buttons. They said the same thing about Tony Bender. They said that's why Tony Bender got killed. But we don't think so either. We think Tony Bender got killed because he was helping Joey Gallo on the break away from Joe Profaci.
I was sorry, go ahead.
Okay. So, you know, and these guys are all, by saying that, they all link together. You know, Albert was in charge of all that. So,
I was wondering if you could explain briefly what you mean by selling buttons, because that's, you know, that's not a phrase that a lot of people are familiar with.
Okay, well, selling buttons mean this. When you were in the mafia, when you want to, if you get elected to get made to be a made man in the family, it means you become, like an officer, if you want to put it that way, in the mafia family. We call it a button. And you get one. You could only get one if you put up by somebody, proposed by somebody in your family, like a captain or the boss, and the other guys vote on it if they like you or if they think you deserve one, and then you get it being made in a family. We call it a buns. But at one time it was said that Albert Anastasia was selling them for $50,000. To get guys made, and then they said Fais Galici was doing it, and you don't know. I don't know anybody, honestly, that got a bun by buying it from Albert or Scalisi. You know, even when I was younger, these guys were still, some were still around.
So,
but I think that's just an excuse. I'm sorry, I think it's an excuse because Vito. Wanted Vito Genovese and Carlo Camino were treacherous, and they lived by the law, and they wanted and Carlos was time to he wanted to be boss. He wanted the fame, he wanted the power, and that's what you do. You step on the guy ahead of you, and that's why Anastasia was taken out. Plus, he was wild, getting wild at the end.
I actually want to go back a bit because we were talking about Murder, Inc. and we were talking about and Anastasia's involvement in that. But he also, as you explained in the book, that wasn't just the one role he had. He was also the underboss under Vincent Mangano. And I was wondering if you could perhaps explain that relationship there, because that was one of the other parts of the book that was very fascinating, which was that you have this very, ruthless individual in the organization, and yet for a long period of time he's this underboss under a guy, and as you explained, they didn't get along very well.
No, Vincent Mangano and Philip and Albert, they're always at each other's throats. Albert was headstrong, he wanted to move, he wanted to do things. Mangano was a little laid back, a lot laid back compared to him, and Albert would, you know, supersede and just do what he wanted to do, and then always have a confrontation with Mangano, and they wanted to kill each other for a while, but they both had backing. Lucky, you know, was very close with Albert. He had Frank. He had Frank Costello. He had a lot of guys, a lot of killers with him. Albert Anastasia. So he was backed by a lot of guys. And Mangano, he didn't have as much power at that point. He was losing the power, and he just didn't get along. So at one point, Albert said, this is it, I'm done. And he took him out. He took him and his brother, took both of them out.
And they only found the bodies of one of them afterward.
Right. Right. But I wrote in the book what my philosophy was, or what I was told in the book.
Now, you also talk in the book about Anastasia and the mob's involvement with law enforcement. And and that's another part of the book I thought was really interesting, which was how it changed over time. You described how you've mentioned already how in the 20s and the 30s, the law was something that could be easily bought. And yet there is this evolving relationship. How in the 20s and 30s, it seems to be mostly about New York police, state and local, and how over time you start to see the federal government stepping in the form of investigative committees. How does Anastasia deal with that? And how does that change create a different sort of pressure on him?
Listen, they were used to having to bind everybody between the governor, the mayor of New York, the district attorneys, the judges. They've been since day one when they came over. These guys were always fought their way with these guys, with them. So they always had a free hand, as long as it was money or some kind of scandal, you know, that you could have over their head. There was a lot of things people would do to get to these guys who would have an upper hand over these guys. And it went all the way to the 50s. I mean, the 50s, you know, they started losing power, you know, there's different committees, you know, police commissioners changed, the mayors changed, and you just lose power by different people coming in. You know, some guys can be bought, some guys can't. Still today, you know, the same way. I think they had all through the 60s. I think when the 60s ended, that's when the boys, you know, like the families lost their power with buying judges and mayors and district attorneys. And it revolves, man. You know, people change. And when that changes, it changes your power in the or structure in the mafia, because what you had before, you don't have now. If you could buy your way out at a gun charge, now you can't buy your way at a gun charge. Now you're in trouble. Well, now you got to do it differently. Now you got to kill three people or witnesses. You know, it makes it different. But when you know that you can put the DA, you have the DA in your pocket, then you don't worry about it. Just do what you got to do, and we'll worry about it then with the money. Because money flowed like water. You're talking about millions and millions and billions and billions of dollars. Money was no problem with these guys. So as long as there was the corruption in politics, you know, made gangsters stronger. If politics wasn't as corrupt, the mafia wouldn't be as strong.
You mentioned, you know, go ahead.
I'm just saying, I mean, you can see that now. I mean, the stronger the law got, the weaker the mafia has gotten.
You mentioned the how there's money flowing through the organization during this period. Did Anastasia, live modestly? Did he flaunt it a little bit? How did he profit from it, in the sense, and how did he use that money? Was he all about just building the organization, or did he do things with, in terms of buying a nice house, living an extravagant life?
Yeah, Albert was making money left and right, drugs, gambling, the Longshoremen Association that his brother ran. He had a mansion in Jersey on the water. This guy, he lived high. You know, he custom made suits, custom made hats, custom made shoes, coats. He lived high. He traveled well. He just spent the money well. I mean, but he lived. He left it to his wife. When he got killed, he left a ton of money to his wife and family, hidden, because everybody else after that, they stopped bringing him money. But he had a lot stashed, and he set the family up real good. But he lived well. He had a beautiful home in Jersey, a mansion on the water. These guys spend it as it comes in. Some guys save it. Some guys reinvest it. Some guys do both. They spend tons of money gambling every day. Some guys buy homes. Some guys invested in restaurants or bars or beauty parlors or whatever they do. Everyone does it differently. These guys are not stupid guys. They, you know, it's according to who they, you know, who they are. But they're not very stupid.
You mentioned,
I think, you know, they're not the smartest guys in the world, but they're not stupid.
You mentioned in the book that periodically how sort of the three strikes that led to the decision to kill Anastasia. I was wondering if you could perhaps explain how it was that he goes from being someone who is feared and basically but rises through the organization to the point where they make a decision that as fearsome as he is, he's got to go. Or maybe because he's so fearsome, he's got to go.
Okay. One is that these guys like crazy, but they don't like too crazy. They fear you, and then when it comes to a point that you're too crazy and uncontrollable, then you lose your power, because then they get together, the other forces, the other crews, the other gangsters, and they start, as bad as you are, as killer you are, when they get enough people around them to say, it's time, no matter who you are, you're gone. Because you can't take the money out of these wise guys' pockets, and you can't scare them too much, because it's just no good. And in this life, it's been done 100 times. The guy under you is 99.9, is going to want to go up the ladder, and he's going to kill you. He's going to kill you. So it's like a script. If you read the script, this is what's going to happen. You're going to be the boss, and the guy under you is going to take you out. And when it's their time, when they feel that they're strong enough, they deserve it, or people around them are making noise about, you know, how crazy Albert is, and it's time to go, and we're losing some political things, or he's selling buttons, or he's shooting civilians, and everybody gets together and go, okay, time to go. Yeah, you know, he's a killer. Okay. But there's 5,000 of us. You think maybe one of us can get them? No. You know, and when you take out their pockets, yeah, they start, you know, gathering together like Indians. They get together, and then they start plotting. One guy, or a couple guys by themselves, or a little crew, they're not smart. They're not smart enough, or they're not, you know, brave enough. But when you got other guys stronger, start, you know, making noise, you're gonna go. It happens all the time. It happened after Albert, and happened before Albert.
So how did they take out Albert himself? You describe in the book, I was wondering if you could perhaps just set the scene for us as to how it was that Albert Anastasia ended up being killed.
Vito Genovese and Carlo Cambino decided that it was time for Albert to go. Carlos was underboss at the time for Albert. He got strength by going to Vito, who was a boss at the time, you know, of his own family. Head of his own family, and they plotted. Said, if I do this, you back me. And, you know, Vito said, yeah, take him out. He's a nut anyway. I'm closer to you than him. You know, let's go. And, you know, they plotted how to get to Albert. They know what he did every day. So they got to his bodyguard. That's why his bodyguard wasn't there, because he went to go have a cigarette outside in the sun, because they got him, and they said, like anything else, you know who we are. Like Carlo Cambino, you know who Carlo is. I'm with Carlo. We're going to kill him. You want to go with him? You're fine. Look what I got with me. What I got with you. You ain't got enough there. Take a walk. And he took a walk, and they easy mark to go in there and kill him. You get to the guys around him all the time. You got to get to the guys around the guys, boss. If he's strong there, nobody, you're not going to get to him. That's why you pick around the edges, and then you get to him. And exactly what they did with Albert. They got to his bodyguards, and then he was easy target.
Yeah, and he was doing the same things. He was living a pattern, as you described. He was going to the barbershop in a hotel. He was doing it on a regular basis. He went in for a shave. So they knew where and when he'd be, when they could definitely get him with minimal complication.
Exactly. I mean, these guys do these routines every day. Why they hit him in Manhattan, I don't know. I don't know why they did him in Brooklyn, because he used to come to Brooklyn too. Used to go to a bar on Court Street. Used to go to a club on Columbia Street. Do a lot of things. Why there? You got me. I don't know. I would have asked, but the last guy I knew that was on the hit, he died too fast. So I didn't have a chance to ask him.
Well, I knew You allude to why they did, because you know, he's in a barber chair. He's relaxed. He's comfortable. He's got that hot towel on his face, so he has no idea what's happening around him. I'm thinking a person like that, he clearly is not expecting it. I mean, you don't put yourself in that situation if you think there's even a chance that some guy's going to show up and kill you.
No. You know, you do know you're always a target. You know that because you saw what happened to the guy before you and you saw what you did. So it's always there. But you get so cocky and so in your mind, you think that you're untouchable. And you say, the Gagnon needs to do it. And because I'm Albert Anastasia and I got 20 guys with guns. They're not going to do it. They're not going to do it. You know? And always been wrong. So he's just another one that was clouded in his mind with this power. And it happened again. That's what Vincent Mangano said about him. He ain't going to do it. He ain't got the cojones. I'm Vincent Mangano. And then he killed him. So it's an ongoing story. It's an ongoing story. They get too, their minds get cloudy with power. And when you're a killer, you know, you don't think right in the first place. You know, how normal are you in the first place if you kill with no remorse and for business? So we're trying to make sense out of things, something that's not sensible.
Well, we've taken up a lot of your time, but before we go, could you tell us what you're working on now?
I just finished a book, What We Really Cowboys, Life After President Street. It's an autobiography. It's part two of the President Street Boys. And it's out now. I just finished a book for Kenniston called The Hitman, the Sonny Pinto story. That should be released next year. And then... And I don't know what I'm doing. I have no idea. I'm just going to sit around and see what I like to do and think of something good that's not been played already. You know, everything I pretty much write, I try to write that hasn't been done. You know, we did the Carmine Persico. There was no books about Carmine, the Snake Persico. That's why we did that one. The President Street Boys was a autobiography that I started me writing. Never been written about. You know, in a book form. And now the Sonny Pinto was never written about. I'm going to find out who else that interests me and that I might know something about and that's not been written. Otherwise, I'm done. Because I don't write stuff just for nothing.
Well, I do hope you find
stories about people.
I do hope you find a topic as good as Albert Anastasia, because this was definitely a very interesting read.
Yeah, Albert's an interesting guy. Yeah, I liked Albert.
Well, Frank DiMatteo, thank you very much for taking some time out of your schedule to speak with us. Hope you have a great day.
Thank you so much.